Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance and use it to your advantage. It's all free. We did it for you. You're exactly the person. If you're a small business owner or want to be, or if you work for a small business, you're exactly who we designed all that for, and we work hard to continue to improve all the information and everything that we have there. So use it to your advantage. It's there for you. It's smallbusinessadvocate.com. Dr. David Gratzer is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's a new friend. He's the newest member of our Brain Trust. And this is a guy that, if you know anything about me, you know that I like what this guy has to say. David Gratzer is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, which is another organization that we like a lot around here. He's a physician licensed in both Canada and the United States. I've actually never met anyone. I don't think I've ever met anyone who was licensed in both countries, and I can't wait to ask him a lot of questions. He talks about the healthcare system that we have here in the United States. He writes about that. His new book is called The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare, and he's our new friend, Dr. David Gratzer. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here. And by the way, folks, he says he lets his friends call him David, so he says I can call him David. David, thank you for being here. Thank you for the work that you're doing. As I mentioned to you off the air, I believe exactly what you said. Capitalism can save healthcare, but the government can't.
Absolutely.
Tell us why.
Well, you know, when I was growing up in Canada, I hadn't given a lot of thought to health policy, but I guess I kind of intuitively thought that a government-run healthcare system was going to be compassionate. I soaked that up from my environment the way I was fond of ice hockey. And when I got to medical school and I started to see really what was going on in Canadian hospitals, I really began to reconsider. There's one morning in particular that shook me. It was 40 below outside, which, by the way, is the same in Celsius as it is in Fahrenheit. And I decided to take a shortcut on the way to the classroom. And so it was the most important lesson I learned in medical school, was actually on the way to the classroom and not in one. And I cut across the emergency department, and I just remember walking in, and it was part of a big emergency room overcrowding of the mid-1990s that was going on right across Canada. And I just remember stepping in, and there were all these elderly people strewn in the hallway on stretchers, and the smell of sweat and of urine and of fear hit me, and I just started to reconsider. And as I went through my studies and I saw more and more what socialized medicine meant, I reconsidered my views, the waiting list, the lack of access, the absolute panic and frustration facing patients. And that is because a government-run system ultimately has to ration, and the way they ration is through waiting. And sometimes that's okay when somebody needs, I don't know, a tummy tuck or something of the sort, but a lot of the time it isn't okay, and that's when I really started to reconsider.
So you saw people in dire need of medical care who were not able to get it because it was rationed.
Look, according to the government's own statistics, not my statistics, not your statistics, Canadian government statistics, 1.2 million Canadians are actively looking for a family doctor and can't find one.
Wow.
There are towns in Canada where they hold annual lotteries, and the winners of the lottery get to be new patients of the local family doctor.
Well, you know, you've seen these. I know a lot of doctors in America who were born, grew up, and educated in Canada, and they're down here. I felt like when you used to watch the Super Bowl, and they'd ask the quarterback, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Disney World.
Right.
I got the feeling whenever a doctor graduated from a medical school in Canada and said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to America.
Right.
But still, David, there are people in the United States who think that the Canadian model is beautiful, and these are people in power, people in leadership, in political leadership. They actually say we should model our system after Canada. I mean, what ballgame are they watching?
ignorance is bliss. You know, in California, they actually just passed legislation, which the governor promptly vetoed, but they actually passed legislation calling for a single-payer system.
Mm. Single-payer, folks, is the other name for universal health care.
Sorry, I didn't mean to slip into technical jargon.
No, it's fine. It's okay to use that because we use it here, too. Just, you know, in case some people may not know. Because single-payer sounds like, on its face, that sounds pretty good. Only one check. Everything goes into one place. You don't realize the ramifications of that. Now, what? Tell us why capitalism can be the savior of our medical system. And by the way, we have some folks listening in Canada, a lot of folks listening over the Internet, but you know, most of the audience listening on the radio, at least, is in the United States. And
right.
So what about the United States medical system? How can capitalism save that?
Most of my book is not about Canada or other socialized medicine systems. Most of my book is looking at some of the most refractory issues in American health care: Medicaid, Medicare, the uninsured, employer-sponsored health insurance. And I go through all of those issues. And I come to the conclusion that we shouldn't draw lessons here in the United States from what Canada does or what from European countries do. But if we want a really successful model for how to reform American health care, we need to look to the other 5/6 of the general economy. If I talk to you about food, clothing, shelter, there are no major problems. I'm not saying America is a perfect country, but people don't go without food for the most part. People are very satisfied with clothing options. What is it about health care that's so unique? And the conclusion I draw is that it's the most regulated part of the economy.
Yeah.
It's the most subsidized part of the economy, and that undermines choice and competition. And if you want to really do something for American healthcare, you've got to move in the opposite direction to the one we've been moving in for the last 60 years.
Well, and we've got to do more than just change the policy. We've got to change the culture.
One right.
of the things
I've
been saying on this show for a long time is in the 21st century, we've got to stop being patients and start being healthcare consumers.
Absolutely.
Because when you're a patient, that connotes being adopted. That connotes being someone else being responsible for me. That connotes, you know, I'm an indigent. I'm a ward of the state, so to speak, or of the corporation. But in the 21st century, we've got to be able to do that. And I think Americans are willing to do that. The problem we got, David, is our tax system, our government system, is still a 20th century system.
Absolutely.
And I want you to address that when we come back after these messages.
Sure.
We have to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, broadcasting live from the Administaff Small Business Classic in Houston, Texas. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And I'll be at your side.
Let the sun catch you crying.
Gary in the pacemaker.
The night's the time for all your tears.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Dr. David Gretzer is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's the author of The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare, and I certainly recommend this to you. You know how I feel about this, folks. You know how important I think it is. You know that I believe exactly what Dr. Gretzer says, that capitalism can save American healthcare system, not the government, not the liberals, not the bleeding hearts. It's going to take capitalism the way it has. David, when you think about, you mentioned the food industry. Look at the food industry. Look at the capital markets industry in the United States. Talk about two highly efficient organizations that are completely run by private organizations.
Right.
And we need to, as we went to the break, I was mentioning the fact that our tax policy, our government policies toward health care are, they're archaic. They're 20th century. We're not in the 20th century anymore, are we?
Well, it's more than just the 20th century. It's mid-20th century. I mean, as you're alluding to, the tax policies that gave rise to employer-sponsored health insurance, what I think gives so much angst to many of your listeners as they're trying to provide health coverage to their employees, really rises out of the wage and price controls of the Second World War, when employers got in the game of providing health insurance because they couldn't raise wages, so they would offer benefits.
Right.
And in 1943, the IRS said that they could do that in pre-tax dollars. That is a model that is hopelessly outdated. I don't think we're going to move much past it, but I think that for 60-plus years, health insurance is something that happened to people. And now, with things being as expensive as they are, I think decisions have to be brought closer to the individual. Just one-size-fits-all health insurance isn't going to work. And the alternative is managed care, which I think most people find pretty unsatisfactory.
Right, right.
So either we move towards a socialized medicine model where somebody else makes decisions for you, or we say, look, we have to have a cultural change as well as policy changes, and we move insurance back to the individual the way, you know, home ownership insurance and car insurance is for the individual and for catastrophic events, and other things falls to, you know, their discretion.
Well, you know, in 1943, 63 years ago, when that the IRS made that ruling, we were in World War II, and immediately following World War II, most individuals would go to work for a company and would stay there for their, you know, for their entire career. My parents
right.
did, your parents probably did, and most that was the model. That's not the model anymore. The younger generations, David, even if you offered them a 40-year career in a company, many of them won't stay there that long. They know, the 22-year-olds coming out of college right now, they know right now that they're probably going to work for four or five, maybe six companies minimum before they retire. By their and that's their plan, not something that will be thrust upon them, and they may want to in the middle of that they may want to stick in there, a go at being an entrepreneur.
Right.
We need to make our healthcare portable.
Right. And I think you've hit the nail on the head. How much times have changed? People don't work in the company town anymore, join the company club with the company swimming pool, and then retire into the company pension plan. Small, medium-sized businesses are well aware that most people stick around for 15, 16 months on average. Our health insurance doesn't really work like that. Most of my book talks about practical ideas like consumer-driven healthcare and health savings plans, which is a small step towards more portability. But at the end of the book, my last chapter, I look a little bit further ahead and I say, look, the single-payer advocates know what they want to do eventually. We on the other side of this aisle, so to speak, need to know what we want to do. And I talk about the fact that portable health insurance will never come from employer-based health insurance. And I talk about some changes to tax policy that would really move us more towards a 21st century health insurance system. Again, that's a little bit beyond the debate we're having today, but I think it's an important one to have.
Well, I agree with you. By the way, folks, the book is called The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare. The author is Dr. David Gratzer. That's Gratzer. David, is there a website?
You can go to the Manhattan Institute website, www.manhattan-institute.org, /the cure, if you want more information. But, of course, if you want to order the book or read some reviews, you can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNobles.com.
You know, David, look at what's happening to retirement programs. Who has started the harness made of corporate provided health care is the defined benefits retirement plan. No one's initiated a defined benefits plan in years.
Right.
So why we need to, just as we the marketplace has changed that and gone to defined contribution, we need to do the same thing with health care, don't we?
Well, in a sense, what we have now is a defined benefits for health insurance, and look how expensive it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to throw out some statistics, I think we can actually put a best before date on American health care.
30 seconds.
2013, when the amount of money we're spending will actually double unless we do something.
Wow.
We've got to do something.
It's all in the book, folks. Good stuff. And if you agree with me, and I know all of you do, then you'll like David's book, The Cure. And if you don't agree with us, then you want to see what we're up to. The Cure by Dr. David Gratzer. David, thank you for being here. Will you come back another day?
An absolute pleasure. I'd be delighted to.
We'd love to have you back. Thanks a lot. Dr. David Gratzer, folks, The Cure. That's the name of the book. You don't want to miss this one. It's an important book for our times. Quick break, right back with Sam Norwood right after these messages. He's a pretty important guy, too.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.